Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick, joined by David Smith, the Executive Director of the Illinois Family Institute and Illinois Family Action.
Hello.
And Lori Higgins, the culture writer for the Illinois Family Institute. The Illinois Senate has approved the Equal Rights Amendment. The legal deadline for ratification of the ERA has come and gone long ago, but surely the left will find a way to get around that. And part of the strategy is to get it approved in Illinois. Now, given the makeup of the General Assembly, do we have any hope of the ERA being stopped in Illinois?
Well, if you're asking me, that's where the fight is going to rage the hottest. We need to stop it in the Illinois House. That is our best chance of stopping it. And as we know, over the last 3 years, we cannot count on any help from Governor Runner. Now, to be fair, this resolution will not go to the governor's desk. But in the Senate, we saw how the Republican caucus just collapsed on the passage of the Illinois ERA. We had Pam Eltoff, Jason Barrickman, John Curran, Mike Connolly, Karen McConaughey, Chris Nybo, Sue Rezin, and Tom Rooney all caving into the pressure of what I would call the pink hat nasty lady crowd or nasty woman crowd. That's not my label for them. That is actually how many of them self-identify. But the fact of the matter is these Republican so-called pro-life lawmakers abandoned the pro-life community. All the pro-life organizations in the state of Illinois, Illinois Right to Life, the Illinois Federation for Right to Life, the Illinois Citizens for Life, Illinois Right to Life, Illinois Family Institute, and others were very concerned. Eagle Forum of Illinois, for example, Concerned Women for America, were all telling our state lawmakers this is a pro-abortion bill. And instead, these lawmakers decided to vote with Planned Parenthood and against their pro-life constituents and bona fides. Did I say that right? Bona fides? And voted to pass this legislation out of the Senate. Now, I want to just bring in Lori here for a moment. Lori, why is this a pro-life concern?
The ERA actually says nothing about women, and the language of it ensures three things. It's going to eradicate abortion restrictions. It's going to end public recognition of sex differences in private spaces. Those are the two main, actually, I should say, the two main points of this, and that's why you see the organizations that support it. And the end result of that is going to be things like requiring women to register with a selective service. And if there's ever a draft, then they will be drafted. Because what the bill does is say there will be no more distinctions between men and women recognized in law or policy. And that's why it's so outrageous what Karen McConaughey said, which was she talked about how it supports, empowers, and protects women. But she wasn't called on to say in what specific ways. And that's problematic. Why I don't know why we don't challenge, why conservatives, real conservatives in Springfield, don't challenge ideas like that.
That's absolutely right. But to your point about eliminating gender distinctions, a Prairie State Wire, which is a online newspaper, came out last week with a story titled Illinois House Approves Spending of $635,000 on 3 lactation and wellness rooms at the state capitol. Okay, let that sink in for a minute. $635,000. First of all, you can build 3 nice homes in Springfield for that kind of money. So they have only 3 lactation and wellness rooms at the state capitol. Why am I bringing this up? Well, I want to, the last paragraph in this article points out that the ERA, which the Republicans helped to pass, would render female-only accommodations like this lactation room unconstitutional.
That's, you know, think about that. The tax dollars going for this. And then you're going to pass a bill that says, no. You can't set aside specific rooms for women. So, you know, where do we go from here?
So a society, a kind society, one that recognizes the needs of a mother who's lactating, would set aside a room, okay? Maybe not $635,000 worth of three rooms, right? But they would make accommodations to recognize that special need. But the ERA, the same folks who voted for the spending of this kind of money on lactation and wellness rooms are also the same ones who want to pass this ERA, which would do away with the lactation and wellness rooms. Am I the only one that sees the irony there?
Well, I have to think about that one further because I mean, about whether the law would be applied like that, because there is the, you know, that's how they're getting rid of the abortion restrictions. They're saying, well, if there's a surgical procedure that only women have, and then there's a surgical procedure like prostatectomies that only men can have, if you do that for men, if you provide state funds for that, then you have to do it for women too. So I have to think through, would this eliminate restroom or lactation rooms, or would it make possible some equivalent for men? I'm not sure. I'd have to think about that. Do you know what I'm saying?
I had a pro-life leader tell me that the polling on the ERA is like 80% of Illinois voters who were polled favor the ERA. So can we understand why even several pro-life, at least they say they're pro-life lawmakers, Republicans, voted for the ERA in the state Senate? They're saying, you know, it's a done deal. Might as well vote for it instead of being voted out of office.
Well, I mean, that's why, if I can say something about Jeannie Ives, this is what was so amazing about Jeannie Ives, is she would take very, very difficult votes, even if it put at risk an election. The reason people are voting for this is they don't understand it. They have been persuaded, because the mainstream press is in the tank for everything leftist, so they've been persuaded that this is something about protecting women, and it actually works against women. It's not only against life, but it's against women. And you can go on to, we have articles online that talk about, you know, the different ways that women will be harmed by this bill. I mean, I mentioned one, which is being required to register for the Selective Service, but there's other things about Social Security and other financial, about alimony or, you know,
Social Security spousal benefits.
Right, exactly. So there are going to be ways that women are fiscally harmed by this, but the mainstream press is in the tank for the left, and so the message doesn't get around that the ERA says equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. It says nothing about women, and this isn't centrally about women's rights. I ask people, so tell me, which civil right now are women deprived of?
That's right.
Can you name me one?
Well, let me go back to this idea of the time frame. So that time supposedly expired in 1982 to pass the ERA, but yet the National Organization for Women, the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, and other Soros-backed groups are pushing hard, spending millions of dollars here in the state of Illinois to get this passed through. We don't want to take it for granted. While the language of the original amendment said it expired, we don't want it to go to a liberal activist court where it could be changed and enacted despite that.
Well, it actually expired in 79, and they extended it to 1982, and so it should be a done deal. And at the time, there were, was it five states? I don't have the stats right in front of me, but something like five states sought to rescind. Yes,
that's right.
And then that was going to the Supreme Court, and then the expiration date came. So the Supreme Court said it's a moot issue now because it's expired. So if it actually is no longer a moot issue, shouldn't those states be able to proceed to rescind their vote if that's what they still want to do? And shouldn't others be able to reconsider their vote on this? I don't know which way it would go.
Well, and now we have a new generation of voters should be given consideration, right?
Right. I mean, if that's what they're going to say.
Many of these states who originally ratified the ERA did so before Roe versus Wade came down, and they may have think twice now, since Roe v. Wade is the law of the land, whether or not they want to give the ERA passage.
Well, right, because this is those who are not aware of the kinds of restrictions that would be overturned, you know. Any kind of restrictions on abortion will be overturned. And actually, this is not conservatives engaging sort of fallacious slippery slope arguments. The left says it straight up. Planned Parenthood wants this. Other liberal organizations want this. In the event that Roe v. Wade is ever overturned, they want to have the ERA in place to do what Roe v. Wade did. And it's really important for people to understand this will overturn any kind of what many people think are reasonable restrictions on abortion.
Including our parental notification of abortion right. law. So, folks, this is very serious. We need you to contact your state representative. It's already passed in the Senate. We need to stop it. They need 71 votes in the Illinois House to pass this legislation. They're closing in. They're spending money. They have lobbyists. We just had a report late last week from Elise Bauck, who is the Stop ERA chairwoman, saying Planned Parenthood is very active down in Springfield, trying to get the votes they need to pass this. We need to speak out.
That's a pretty good indication that this is, in fact, a pro-abortion bill if Planned Parenthood is down there trying to get this approved. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
I just want to say one thing. Do people actually believe that there is this much frenetic activity on the part of leftist organizations and so much money because women are deprived of something right now? Really? Do people really believe that? And I would say, in addition to encouraging your lawmaker to stand against this bill, you should also encourage your lawmaker to ask questions on the floor about this resolution, because to ask them, so exactly what I said, so what civil rights are women deprived of? Because we have to expose what this is really about. And we didn't even talk about that this is going to be used by the trans community to access women's private spaces and end sex segregation in every activity and in every space.
Well, that's right. It's going to go ahead, Monty. Go ahead.
Well, I talked to a pro-life lady. She runs a pro-life organization. And she said, you know, what's the big deal with the ERA? Here in Illinois, we already have taxpayer funding of abortion, so what will change? And we already have multi-sex restrooms and locker rooms. So what's going to change?
Okay, I will say this about the sex-integrated private spaces. They are not everywhere. This will be used to enforce it everywhere.
That's right.
That's an incredibly naive statement on the part of your friend or whoever you were talking to.
Associate.
Because this is what conservatives don't do enough. I would argue many people, in addition to conservatives, but we need to do more of it, is to say, look at the language of the law and ask yourself, how might that language be applied or used or exploited or abused? Not what are the proponents saying in order to get it passed.
Let me just encourage our listeners to please make a phone call this week. Call 217-782-2000. That is the Springfield Capitol, and ask for your state representative and urge them, him or her, to vote no to the ERA. No to the ERA.
And if you don't know who your state representative is, you can go to illinoisfamily.org and click on Officials Finder, and you can find out who your state rep is.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a statement because I've been ruminating on the lactation rooms. What this will do will enable chest feeding men to use lactation rooms. No, seriously, it will.
Well, I don't need that mental picture.
Yes. And you know what? actual women who are lactating don't need them in their restroom, in their lactation room.
Well, this is Illinois Family Spotlight. We will continue our conversation with Lori Higgins. After this, we're going to talk about a school curriculum indoctrination bill. You need to hear it. Stay tuned.
This is Albert Moeller for Townhall.com. The California Assembly has yet again adopted legislation that makes an undeniable infringement on religious liberty. Assembly Bill 2943 would make it fraudulent and illegal to offer in any way to have anything to do with a change in sexual orientation, or for that matter, an individual's sexual identity. The Alliance Defending Freedom says the breadth of this censorship is staggering. David French at National Review described it as extraordinarily radical. Part of the radical nature of this legislation is the fact that it now elevates sexual identity to something that is beyond question. In other words, those who are pushing for the moral revolution, especially on LGBT issues, are setting out to eradicate, even by force of coercive law, anyone who would represent any worldview that would stand in their way. I'm Albert Moeller.
Chemical abortions can be reversed. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Women who take the abortion pill often regret the decision, but new research shows it can be reversed if they act quickly. Abortifacients block progesterone receptors, which means developing babies don't get oxygen and nutrients that they need. But as World Magazine reports, if a mother takes a high enough dose of progesterone within 72 hours of taking the abortion pill, the baby has as much as a 68% chance of survival. This is great news, which is why pro-abortion forces not only attack the procedure, but laws that require physicians to inform patients of the possibility. But with a new study, again as World tells us, at least one pro-abortion physician admits that the procedure can make biological sense. Well, that's faint praise, but we'll take it. Of course, when a mother regrets her decision to take the abortion pill and tries to save her baby, doing all we can to help makes moral sense as well. For more on faith and culture, come to breakpoint.org. I'm John Stone Street.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. Monty Lurick here, joined by IFI's Dave Smith and Lori Higgins. Thanks for making us part of your day. Lori, a bill in the legislature would mandate an emphasis on LGBTQXYZ history in our public schools. Even elementary schools, students would be subjected to this. Your reaction?
Oh, my gosh. I have lots of reactions, none of them pleasant. This is a very, very troubling bill. Actually, the only state in the country that has a similar bill is California, which tells you how radical this bill is. It will require that the roles and contributions of those who identify as homosexual or trans should be taught to students in grades K through 12. And in addition, you wouldn't be able to graduate from eighth grade unless you had given evidence of having a comprehensive knowledge of their roles and contributions. And by the way, this
bill
doesn't...
There's no opt-out?
There is no opt-out. It's required, because this is an amendment to a school, to the school code, which requires that no pupils shall be graduated from the eighth grade of any public school unless they've received such instruction, which now includes the history of LGBT people as well as LGBT activism, and give evidence of having a comprehensive knowledge of that. And by the way, this bill starts with, it addresses the textbook block grant program, which has not been funded for the past 5 years. But if it becomes funded again, which many believe if Pritzker becomes governor, it will be funded, then this bill will apply to public and private schools, including Catholic schools, because Catholic schools and other private religious schools have used the textbook grant program. So they would either have to forego the financial assistance that would represent, or they would have to participate in this indoctrination. And this is indoctrination. And one of the...
This is, absolutely.
One of the problems is that, and this is what needs to be pressed in Springfield, and nobody wants to go here. You have to say, what is homosexuality? What constitutes it? How do you define it? Because the left is using a fallacious and absurd, and I would argue insulting, analogy to race to get this bill passed. They're saying, well, this applies to people of different races, so why not homosexuals and why not trans-identifying persons? But the issue is, that's not a fair, just, or sound analogy. You have to find the right analogy, which I would argue is polyamory. So can you imagine if someone said, well, we need to talk about the roles and contributions of polyamorists, their noteworthy contributions to society. We should do that in public schools. Does anyone think a bill like that would pass? Does anyone think that a school administrator or a teacher would teach that? Well, I know there's teachers who would do it, but no school administration would permit it and no school board would allow it. So the question is, why not? And the reason I say polyamory is the closest analogy, because you have to say, well, what constitutes homosexuality? Well, what constitutes it are subjective internal feelings or desires and volitional acts, behaviors. So we can see that has no points of correspondence with race or biological sex.
That's right.
And so we have to have the proper analogy so we know how to think about whether this is a legitimate bill. This bill is based on a leftist assumption, not a fact, that homosexuality and trans behaviors are morally acceptable. That's why we wouldn't have, have the roles and contributions of polyamorists, because people know such a bill would go much farther than just saying a fact about, oh, this person contributed this. It would go to normalizing polyamory. And that's what this bill is intended to do. It's intended to transfer the good feelings that children and teens have about achievements onto homosexuality and the whole trans ideology.
Well, Lori, the goal is to normalize, as you say, I like that word, normalize, to make normal the LGBTQIA lifestyle and to shape hearts and minds for generations to come, right?
Exactly. We already teach about the accomplishments of Sally Ride. I'm sure grade schoolers have heard she was the first woman in space and a physicist, or the plays of Oscar Wilde. They don't want their contributions taught. They want their homosexuality taught.
That's right. And we already know that the left has used for quite a while the government schools to bring about cultural change. And this seems to be their latest tactic sweeping across the United States. Let me just read you a couple paragraphs from the Boston Globe from last week, where in Massachusetts, government schools will be able to try new curriculum. So, let me read this. Does this sound familiar to you, Lori? So they're going to be able to try a new curriculum with LGBTQ-themed history, English, and health this fall, and it's an effort to help all students see themselves reflected in the classrooms. The curriculum, developed by a team of teachers with Massachusetts Safe Schools Program for LGBTQ students and the Massachusetts Commission on LGBTQ Youth, will be released this summer. It will feature lessons on the 1969 Stonewall Riots and writings by gay and lesbian authors such as Langston Hughes and Willa Cather. It will also feature lessons like how Nick Carraway's love for Jay Gatsby. Does that sound familiar, Lori?
Yes, this is exactly what they are doing. They're bringing in outside organizations, which, by the way, this sexuality indoctrination bill requires that people who are sort of in charge of this will be open homosexuals in schools and in the community, and they will be in charge of creating and disseminating this information in schools. And that's exactly what this is doing. This is a wholesale promotion of a set of beliefs, not facts, about homosexuality. So the question is, what about those kids who come and say, well, I identify as a polyamorist. Why can't I see myself represented in curricula? We wouldn't do that, and schools wouldn't do it because they wouldn't want to normalize polyamory. Why don't we do that for any of the other what are called paraphilias, like fetishism or sadomasochism? The left will say, well, those aren't identities. Well, I mean, their identities to people who choose to make put them at the cornerstone of their what they say is their identity. What about those who experience genetic sexual attraction, which is attraction to a very close relative? What about those who identify as minor attracted persons? Some people who are minor attracted persons, we used to call that pedophilia, don't act on their impulses, but they identify as a minor attracted person. Why can't their roles and contributions be included in this? And that,
well, stay tuned because that's coming.
Yeah. For sure, polyamory will be next. Because it is the closest analogy, and there is a huge movement to normalize, you know, what do they call that? Consensual non-monogamy is the word they use for that. But this is why.
Well, let me.
Oh, I just want to say this one last thing. It's critically important that people press their lawmakers to say, how is homosexuality like race? What this is the only answer I've ever received when I've really pushed someone on the left. They'll say, well, both have been marginalized. Okay, so are they arguing, therefore, that any group that has been marginalized, in other words, their behavior has been disapproved of by society, any group that's been marginalized has to have, every group is therefore like groups defined by race, and every group must therefore be included in school curriculum. This is 13 years of indoctrination because this will start at kindergarten.
Kindergarten. Let's stress that.
Well, let's
stress it.
Will this be LGBT history, warts and all? When we teach history about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, well, we know they did some great things, but they also owned slaves. We'll include the bad stuff, too.
Well, I mean, here's the bigger problem is not just the bad stuff they did, because I don't think we really want to get into saying, you know, and it depends on the age, fleshing out the whole life of someone, including all of their foibles and all of their sins. What I think we should do is say, if we're going to talk about homosexuality and we're going to talk about the roles and contributions there, it presumes a set of assumptions about homosexuality. And we can't just presume those. We have to talk about them. And therefore, we have to include dissenting views on the nature and morality of homosexuality. And schools won't do that because what they've done is said, well, that's going to make the homosexual kids unsafe. Well, what about the kids who understand implicitly that their Christian worldview and their Christian beliefs are being not just marginalized, but attacked and undermined by this teaching? Does anyone ever talk about, well, how does that make them feel safe?
That's right. Absolutely. Well, Laura, you pointed out that we need to press our lawmakers, and I want to encourage our listeners, call your state senator, call your state representative. The bill number in the Senate is SB 3249. In the House, it's House Bill 5596. Let me repeat that. In the Senate Bill 3249, also as SB 3249. The House bill is HB 5596. Call your state lawmaker. If you don't know who your state lawmaker is, you can look it up on our website, or you can call us at Illinois Family Action at 708-781-9371. We'll be happy to look up this information for you and give you the phone numbers. It is vital that you speak out, send an email, visit your state lawmaker, both of them, state senator and state rep, to let them know that this kind of indoctrination, this kind of promotion of a lifestyle that you don't necessarily agree with, is not acceptable. Now, Lori, the normalization, you talked a lot about normalization. It's already happening in our school. We don't need this bill passed because it is already happening. In fact, last week you wrote an article about a music teacher, a first grade music teacher, who normalized his same-sex, quote-unquote, marriage in front of his kids. So this is already happening, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, I think you sent me an article today that it's a an article about a bunch of teachers who claim that they're harassed at school who identify as trans. And so the question is that we have to get – that's why we have to get
– And that was an NPR article, National Public Radio or National Propaganda Radio, which is really pushing this issue hard as well as a social justice issue.
Right. So the first story, the one about the Illinois music teacher, this was his first graders who – asked, okay, his husband, and I'm using my scare quotes for that, because you can't actually have a real marriage with two men. That doesn't, marriage is something. It has a nature. We don't create it, and the law can't change it.
And it was defined by God.
Yes. And so his husband sent him a bouquet of flowers to school, which he placed somewhere where his students could see it. And they, when they asked about it, which I would say this was a provocative act he did, he, of course, knew little children were going to ask about it. They said, is that from your wife? And he said, no, it's from my husband. And then some kids, I don't know how many, someone said, ew, and someone said, gross. And so he took that upon himself as a teachable moment to tell them that they should be respectful. In other words, they should respect homosexual faux marriages. That is not true. We have no obligation.
So this teacher, that's right, this teacher, Nathan Etter, used this opportunity to advance the LGBTQIAXYZ narrative to his first graders.
Right. So for many parents who are protecting their children at these young ages, I have a lot of grandchildren, and the oldest one is 8. He does not know about homosexuality. He does not know about homosexual marriage. He shouldn't know about that. This is too confusing and disturbing to many children. So this is age inappropriate. But this is what they, you know what, when you talk about teachable moments, they can manage to find all sorts of, or manufacture teachable moments in order to assert their ontological and moral assumptions to young children. And this is what teachers, leftist teachers, do in public schools. They want absolute autonomy to engage in efforts to change the moral, political, philosophical beliefs of other
That's
people's
right.
children.
That's right. In fact, the article that you quote is the Chicago Tribune. The last paragraph says that the teacher, quote, wants to continue to live his life authentically and use teachable moments as they rise.
Oh.
Use teachable moments as they arise.
And they don't just arise.
Let me ask you this, Lori. If I am a parent and I'm sending my kids to a private Christian school or I'm homeschooling my kids, why should I be concerned about this legislation?
Well, there's a couple of good reasons. First, the children who are in public schools right now are our culture makers in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, so we should care about what they're being indoctrinated with. Secondly, it's a stewardship issue. Our tax dollars are being used to advance ideas that are destructive and false. And if you really love people, if you really love others, you'll care about what other people's children are being taught.
Amen.
There are many, many parents who are theologically orthodox Christians, but for one reason or another cannot afford private schools and cannot homeschool. There are many families that there is only one wage earner in the family, and that's disability, desertion, death, all sorts of reasons why people have only one wage earner, and their only choice is public schools. We shouldn't abandon them.
Amen. Thank you, Lori. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up here, but we have one whole month left, the month of May. The Illinois General Assembly is scheduled to adjourn on May 31st, and we're hoping and praying that all of our listeners will be praying for the governor, for Speaker Madigan, and for President Cullerton, and all the leaders as they continue on with this session. But we're also praying that these pieces of legislation that we talked about here today, and there's others, and we'll do more podcasts on those, but the ERA and this inclusive curriculum legislation will not get the traction it needs to pass either chamber. So with that, Monty.
All right. Well, we need to say goodbye. But Dave, before we do that, we have important event coming up Saturday in Medina, Illinois.
That's right.
And then a big banquet coming up when? In October.
Right. So just keep the number 5 in your head. May 5th, we have John Stone Street going to be doing a worldview conference for us at Medina Baptist Church in Medina, Illinois. You can find more information out about that at illinoisfamily.org/events. And then on October 5, we have our annual fall banquet this year with George Barna being our keynote speaker. Dan Proft is going to be our MC, and Jeannie Ives is going to make a special appearance to talk to our crowd about Illinois' math problem. And boy, do we have a math problem in Springfield.
Yes, we do. All right. Well, thank you so much, Lori, for joining us. And thank you, folks, for joining us as well. Have a great day. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.